Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
It's about Q-A-T-A-R. So this is one of the few words which are... they're not allowed in Scrabble. Qatar and Qantas. Q-U-A-N-T-A-S. Qantas. It's an interesting thing. It's a country in the Persian Gulf. So it's a gulf between basically Saudi Arabia and Persia in Asia. Above Iran. This northern seaboard of Iran is the Caspian Sea, an inland sea, which has sort of been used up, drying up, due to Soviet agriculture here. And so we're going to talk about Qatar. So for me, I didn't know the difference between Bahrain and Qatar. So you've got the basic lopsided rectangle of Arabia and the Gulf up the top of it. In the Gulf is a little finger sticking into the Gulf as you go in, and that little finger sort of acting as a sort of a little peninsula. That's Qatar. So that's what Qatar is. And inside the shelter of that finger are a series of islands, and those islands are Bahrain. And so it's not surprising that they have a different type of flags. The Qatar flag is like the Bahrain flag. Bahrain is red and five zigzags. Qatar is maroon. It's sort of one of the more ugly things. And now I sort of looked at this by trying to get my head around some of the COVID statistics and began looking at the flags and stuff like that. And so I've been doing a series of podcasts. Let's go through the top: Paraguay, Uruguay, Comoros, Bahrain, and Bahrain, and Qatar. Let's read about Qatar. This is going through here at the moment, just having a check. There's going to be an awful squatchiness. Yep, it is recording. Sorry, you'll hear the as the link into the recorder is not that well. Qatar. Local vernacular pronounces Qatar. I can't. Qatar. Officially, the state of Qatar is a country located in Western Asia, occupying the small Qatar Peninsula in the northeastern coast of the Arabian Peninsula. Its sole land border is with the neighbouring Gulf Cooperation Council monarchy of Saudi Arabia to the south. So these are three monarchies. Now, Bahrain is a constitutional monarchy, so it's a monarchy which has got constitutional limitations on its power. So it's got a series of councils which can suggest laws, and it can be refused, but then the king's veto can be vetoed again by a two-thirds majority. But however, it's all one family. So it's basically a single family thing, Bahrain. So Bahrain's a much smaller place. The rest of the territory... Okay. In early 2017, Qatar's total population was 2.6 million. 113,000 Qatari citizens and 2.3 million expatriates. So it's... what is it? It's a roughly 10 to 1 ratio. So I've got here down percentage. It's 11.6% Qatari. So the majority of people you meet, it will be unusual to get a Qatari. The country has the highest per capita income in the world. Qatar has classified its UN a country of very high human development and is widely regarded as the most advanced Arab state for human development. Qatar has a high-income economy backed by the world's third-largest natural gas reserves or oil reserves. So, basically, a city, sort of a regional city in Australia, not Canberra, but somewhere along those sides, has got the wealth of a third of the world's oil. Qatar has been ruled by the House of Thani since Muhammad bin Thani signed a treaty with the British in 1868 that recognised its separate status. Following the Ottoman rule, Qajar became a British protectorate the early 20th century until gaining its independence in 1971. So, essentially, Britain sort of nibbled off bits of the Gulf state, which it could... It nibbled bits of Saudi Arabia off. Okay. In 2003, the constitution was overwhelmingly approved in a referendum with almost 98% in favour. In the 21st century, Qatar emerged as a significant power in the Arab world, both through its globally expanding media group Al Jazeera Media Network, and reportedly supporting several rebel groups financially during the Arab Spring. For its size, Qatar wields disproportionate influence on the world. It has been identified as a middle power. So it's sort of like Canberra as a separate middle power to the rest of Australia. It cannot have a very big military force. I would be surprised to find out about it. Qatar is subject to diplomatic and economic embargo by Saudi Arabia, the United Emirates, Bahrain, Egypt, which began in 2017. The Saudi Arabia has proposed construction of a Salwa Canal, which would run along the Qatar-Saudi border, effectively turning Qatar into an island. So they're pissed off with it for some reason, and we'll find out. Why are they upset with Qatar? Qatar, it got also the world soccer. Pliny the Elder, a Roman writer, documented the earliest account pertaining to the inhabitants of the peninsula around the mid-first century AD, referring to them as Cathariri, a designation which may have derived from the name of a prominent local settlement. A century later, Ptolemy produced the first known map to depict the peninsula, referring it as Qatari. The map referenced a town named Qatara, the eastern peninsula. The term Qatara, inhabitants Qatari, was exclusively used until the 18th century, after which the C turns to K, Qatari, emerged, the most commonly recognized spelling. Eventually, after several variations of Qatar and Qatar, the modern derivative Qatar was adopted as the country's name with a Q. In standard Arabic, the name is pronounced Qatar, while the local dialect is guitar. It sounds like guitar. History. Human habitation in Qatar dates back 50,000 years ago, which is not surprising because it's out of Africa, but 30,000 years. So it's old as the Aboriginals. Settlements and tools dating back to the Stone Age have been unearthed in the peninsula. Mesopotamian artifacts originated in the Ubaid period, 650 to 380 BC, have been discovered in the abandoned coastal settlements. Al Dasa, a settlement located on the western coast of Qatar, is the most important Ibadist site in the country and is believed to have accommodated a small seasonal encampment. Kassite Babylonian material dating back to the 2nd millennium BC is found in El Kor Islands, attests to the trade relationships between the inhabitants of Qatar and the Kassites in modern-day Bahrain. Well, there you go. Just astonishing. You think Bahrain and Qatar would get together and just... obviously they won't. Among the findings were 3 million crushed snail shells and Kassite potsherds. It's been suggested that Qatar was the earliest known site of shellfish dye production, owing to the purple dye industry which existed on the coast. So, essentially, to make this purple dye, you had to get the shellfish, crush it, and do it. There's a series of chemical reactions, and it came out. I'll have to find out about that. I remember seeing horrible jobs, worst jobs in history type of thing. The story of making the dye, the purple dye. In 224 AD, the Sasanian Empire gained control over the territory surrounding the Persian Gulf. Qatar played a role in the commercial activity of the Sassanids, contributing at least two commodities, precious pearls and purple dime. Under the Sassan reign, many of the inhabitants in Eastern Asia were introduced to Christianity following the eastward dispersal of the religion by the Mesopotamian Christians. Monasteries were constructed and further settlements were founded during this era. During the latter part of the Christian era, Qatar comprised of a region known as Beth Qatar, or Syriac for the House of Qataris. The region was not limited to Qatar, but included Bahrain, Taroudut Island, Al-Khat and Al-Hassa. In 628, Muhammad sent a Muslim envoy to the ruler of Eastern Arabia, named Manzur ibn Sual al-Tamim, and requested that he and his subjects accept the Islam. Man obliged his request, and accordingly, most Arab tribes in the regions were converted to Islam. After the adoption of Islam, the Arabs led the Muslim conquest of Persia, resulted in the fall of the Sasanid Empire. So, this is very interesting because this is basically religion as a military formation, organization things. If you, I can well imagine if you didn't have communication systems and you know, electoral systems, you'd be forever just fighting each other. But Muslims, it's interesting how it's got together. Early and late Islamic period, 661 to 1783. Qatar was described as a famous horse-camel breeding centre during the Oman period. In the 8th century, it started benefiting from its commercially strategic position in the Persian Gulf and went on to become a centre of pearl trading. Substantial development in pearl industry around the Qatari Peninsula occurred during the Abbasid era. Ships voyaging from Basra and to India and China would make stops at Qatar ports during the period. Chinese porcelain, West African coins and artifacts from Thailand have been discovered in Qatar. Archaeological remains from the 9th century suggest Qatar inhabitants used greater wealth to construct high-quality homes and public buildings. Over 100 stone-built houses, two mosques, and the Al-Bsid Fort were constructed in the Merwab during this period. I think Merwab is in Bahrain now, but okay. When the Caliphate's prosperity declined in Iraq, so did Qatar. Qatar is mentioned in the 13th century Muslim scholar Yaqut al-Hamani's work, something else, which alludes to Qatar's finely striped woven cloth and their skills in improvement and finishing of spears, as you would. Much of the Eastern Arabia was controlled by the Urfarids in 1253, but control of the region was seized by Prince Ormus of 1320. Qatar's pearls provided the kingdom with one of its main sources of income. In 1515, Emmanuel I of Portugal vacillated, and the kingdom of Omas, Portugal went on to seize a significant portion of the Eastern Arabia in 1521. In 1550, the inhabitants of Al-Hassa voluntarily submitted to the rule of the Ottomans, referring them to Portuguese, having retained a negligible military presence in the area. The Ottomans were expelled by Banu Khalid tribe in 1670. So, there you go. This is very interesting that the Ottomans were called in. It's this people they don't like is sufficient for them to call in external powers, but the external power really didn't want to have anything. Bahraini and Saudi rule. All right. In 1766, members of the Al Khalifa family of Utab tribal confederation migrated from Kuwait to Zabra in Qatar. By the time of their arrival, the Bani Khalid exercised weak authority over the peninsula. Notwithstanding the fact that the largest village was ruled by the distant king, the 1783 Qatar-based Bani Upar clans and allied Arab tribes invaded and annexed Bahrain from the Persians. The Al-Khalifa imposed their authority over Bahrain and retained their jurisdictions over Zabara. So the Khalifa are still there today, so I don't quite understand. It's just the same family name which is in power today in Bahrain. So, following his swearing in as Crown Prince of Wahhabi in 1788, Saud bin Al-Az moved to expand Wahhabi territory eastward towards the Persian Gulf and Qatar. After defeating the Bani Karid in 1795, the Wahhabi were attacked on two fronts. The Ottomans and the Egyptians assaulted the western front, while the Al-Khalifa in Bahrain and the Omanis launched an attack against the eastern front. Poor Kuwait's been smashed. Upon being made aware of the Egyptian advance on the Omanis launched an attack against the eastern front. Advance on the western frontier and reduced his garrisons in Bahrain and Sasa in order to deploy his troops. Saud bin Sultan, ruler of Muscat, capitalized on this opportunity and raided the Wahhabi garrisons on the... Let's see, this has got the eastern coast, setting fire to the fort of as you do. It's a real smash-up derby here. Saharaba. The Al-Khalifa were effectively returned to power thereafter. As punishment for piracy, the East India Company vessels bombarded Doha in 1821, destroying the town and forcing hundreds of residents to flee. In 1825, the House of Thani was established with Sheikh Mohammed bin Thani as the first leader. Although Qatar was discovered a dependency of Bahrain, the Al-Khalifa faced opposition from local tribes. In 1867, Al-Khalifa, along with the ruler of Dudabi, sent a massive naval force to Al-Kawaka in an effort to crush the Qatari vessels. This resulted in a maritime Qatari-Bahraini war of the last whole year, 1867 to 1868, in which Bahrain and Dudabi forces sacked and looted Doha and Al-Waqa. Bahraini hostilities were in violation of the perpetual truce of peace and friendship of 1861. The joint incursion, in addition to the Qatari counterattack, prompted British political resident Colonel Lewis Pelly to impose a settlement in 1868. His mission to Bahrain and Qatar had the resulting peace treaty were milestones because they implicitly recognized the distinctiveness of Qatar and Bahrain and explicitly acknowledged the position of Mohammed bin Thani. In addition to censoring Bahraini for its breach of agreement, Pell negotiated with the Qatari sheikhs who were represented by Mohammed bin Thani. The negotiation was the first stage of development of Qatar as a sheikhdom. However, Qatar was not officially recognized as a British protectorate until 1916. God. The Ottoman period, 1871 to 1915. Under the military and political pressure from the governor of the Ottoman Beylik of Baghdad, Midhat Pasha, the ruling Al-Thani tribe, submitted to the Ottoman rule in 1871. The Ottoman government imposed reformist transit measures concerning taxation, land registration to fully integrate these areas into the empire. Despite the disapproval of local tribes, Al-Thani continued supporting the Ottomans' rule. Qatari-Ottoman relations, however, soon stagnated. In 1882, they suffered further setbacks when the Ottomans refused to aid Al-Thani in his expedition of Dudabi-occupied Kawar. In addition, the Ottomans supported the Ottoman subject Mohammed bin Abdul Wahab, who attempted to supplant Al-Thani as Qasim in Qatar in 1888. This eventually led Al-Thani to rebel against the Ottomans, who he believed were seeking to usurp control of the peninsula. He resigned as Kaimakam and stopped paying taxes in August 1892. In February 1893, Mehmed Hafiz Pasha arrived in Qatar in the interest of seeking unpaid taxes and accosting Jassim bin Mohammed's opposition to the proposed Ottoman administrative reform. Sorry, you're COVID safe out there yourself, mate. Fearing that he would face death or imprisonment, Jassim retreated to Al Wahaj, 6 kilometres west of Doha. So Doha is in Qatar, so that's an interesting aspect. Qatar's got a microscopic skerrick of a population, and they can vote in the Security Council. It just got me stumped. Mehmed imprisoned Jassim's brother and 13 prominent Qatari tribal leaders on the Ottoman's corvette and Meherik as a punishment for its insubordination. Ahmed declined to offer to release the captives for a fee of 10,000 liras. He ordered the column of approximately 200 troops to advance towards Jassim al-Jarrah fort under the command of Yusuf Effendi, thus signaling the start of the Battle of al-Wajaba. Well, with 200 people, I mean, this is sort of like, you know, what is it? You know, a form of people. You know, every of these troops came under heavy gunfire by the sizable troop of Qawati infantry and cavalry shortly after arriving at Al-Wajaba. They retreated to Sheikh Bakr fortress, where they were again forced to draw back from the Qatari incursions. After they withdrew to Al-Bida fortress, Jassim advanced 6 column and besieged the fortress, resulting in the Ottomans' concession of defeat and agreement to relinquish their captives in return for the safe passage of Mehmed Pasha's cavalry to Hafuf by land. Although Qatar did not gain full independence from the Ottoman Empire, the result of the battle forced the treaty that would later form the basis of Qatar's emerging as an autonomous country within the empire. So you'd think they'd learn something. This is old man Turkey. He was all over the place. The British period, 1916-71. The Anglo-Turkish Convention of 1913, the Ottomans agreed to renounce their claim of Qatar and withdraw the garrisons from Doha. However, at the outbreak of World War I, nothing was done to carry this out, and the garrison remained in the fort of Doha, although the numbers dwindled as the men deserted. In 1915, with the presence of British gunboats in the harbour, Abdullah bin Jassim al-Thani, who was pro-British, persuaded the remainder to abandon the fort, and then the British troops reports the following morning they found it deserted. Qatar became British protectorate on the 3rd of November 1916, when the United Kingdom signed a treaty with Sheikh Abdul bin Jassim al-Thani to bring Qatar under the trucial system of administration. While Abdullah agreed not to enter into any relations with any other power without prior consent of the British government, the latter guaranteed the protection of Qatar from aggression by sea and provided its good officers in the event of attack by land. This latter undertaking was left deliberately vague. On the 5th of May 1935, while agreeing an oil concession with the British oil company, Anglo-Persian Oil Company, Abdullah signed another treaty with the British government, which granted Qatar protection against internal and external threats. Oil reserves were first discovered in 1939. Exploration and development were, however, delayed by World War II. So it's interesting. Imagine the Germans just really ran out of fuel. And also Japan was a thing. The focus of British interest in Qatar changed after the Second World War with the independence of India, the creation of Pakistan in 1947, and the development of oil in Qatar. In 1949, the appointment of the first British political officer at Doha, John Wilton, signified the strengthening of the Anglo-Qatar relations. Oil exports began in 1949, and oil revenues became the country's main source of revenue. The pearl trade had gone into decline. These revenues were used to fund the expansion and modernisation of Qatar's infrastructure. When Britain officially announced in 1968 that it was draw from the Persian Gulf in 3 years' time, Qatar joined talks with Bahrain and seven other traditional states to create a federation. Regional disputes, however, persuaded Qatar and Bahrain to withdraw from the talks and become independent states separate from the traditional states, which went on to become the United Arab Emirates. Well, there you go. Now I know what UAE is, the traditional states. So, the truce states. Now, I have to understand what the United Arab Emirates are. Emirates. Independence and aftermath, 1971 to the present. On the 3rd of November 1916, Sheikh Qatar entered into a treaty relationship with the United Kingdom. The treaty reserved foreign affairs and defence to the United Kingdom, but allowed for internal autonomy. On the 3rd of December 1971... the special treaty arrangements were inconsistent with the full international responsibility as a sovereign independent state, were terminated. This was done under the agreement reached by the ruler of Qatar and the... So, unfortunately, look, my poor brain is mixing up a little bit, like getting basic information about Bahrain and Qatar, but I just haven't fully understood the two things. So that's really, they should get back together, all these things. They're just, especially the truce of the states should actually come together, I think. In 1981, Qatar played a significant role in the Gulf War, particularly during the Battle of Khafji, in which Qatari tanks rolled through the streets of the town and provided fire support for the Saudi Arabian National Guard units that were engaging the Iraq army troops. Qatar allowed the coalition troops from Canada to use the country as an airbase to launch aircraft on CAP duty, and also admitted the Air Force of the United States and France to operate in its territories. In 1995, Emir Ahmed bin Khalifa Al Thani seized control of the country from his father. What? Khalifa bin Hamid Al Thani, with the support of the armed forces and cabinet, as well as neighbouring states and France. Under Emir Hamid, Qatar has experienced a moderate degree of liberalisation, including the launch of the Al Jazeera television station in 1996. The endorsement of women's suffrage or the right to vote in municipal elections, the drafting of the first written constitution, the inauguration of the Roman Catholic Church. In 2010, Qatar won the rights to host the 2021 FIFA World Cup, making it the first country in the Middle East to be selected for the host of tournaments. And of course, this is how could a country so small get to vote for FIFA. The Emir announced Qatar's plans to hold the first national legislative elections in 2013. They were scheduled to be held in the second half of 2013, but were postponed to June 2013 and may be delayed to 2019. The Legislative Council will also be the 140th Inter-Parliamentary Union Assembly for the first time for April 2019. I don't quite understand. In 2003, Qatar served as the US Central Command headquarters and one of the main launching sites for the invasion of Iraq. In March 2005, a suicide bombing killed the US teacher from Dorset called Jonathan Adams at the Doha's Players Theatre, shocking the country, which had not previously experienced acts of terrorism. The bombing was carried out by the Omar Ahmed Abdullah Ali, an Egyptian resident of Qatar, who had suspected tied with Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. In 2021, so what time is that year? 2003. In 2011, Qatar joined NATO's operations in Libya and reportedly armed Libyan operation groups. It also, this is just insane. It also currently a major funder of weapons for rebel groups in Syrian civil war. Well, no more. Qatar is pursuing an Afghan peace deal, and in January 2012, the Afghan Taliban said they were setting up a political office in Qatar to facilitate talks. This was done in order to facilitate peace negotiations with the support of other countries, including the United States and Afghanistan. Ahmed Rashid, writing in the Financial Times, stated that although the office in Qatar had facilitated meetings with the Taliban and other countries and organizations, including the U.S. State Department, the UN, Japan, and several European governments, the non-government organizations, all have been trying to push forward the idea of peace talks, suggestions since September 2017 by the President of both the United States and Afghanistan have reportedly led to protests of senior officials of the American State Department, whatever that means. On June 3rd, 2013, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani became the Emir of Qatar after his father handed over the power in a certified speech. So, in 1995, Hamad Thani took over from his father, Khalifa Thani. Now, Tamid. So there's Hamad and now Tamim. Tamim is bin Hamad. Bin Hamid must be son of. So Hamad bin Khalifa means son of. So Osama bin Laden means son of. No, it must be. That's why you can have so many bins. Sheikh Tamim has prioritized improving domestic welfare of citizens, which includes establishing advanced healthcare and education system, expanding the country's infrastructure in preparation for hosting the 2022 World Cup. Qatar participated in the Saudi Arabian-led intervention in Yemen against the Houthis, and the forces loyal to President Ali Abdul Shay, who was deposed in the 2011 Arab uprising. The increased influence of Qatar and its role during the Arab Spring, especially during the Bahraini uprising in 2011, worsened long-standing tensions with Saudi Arabia, the neighbouring United Arab Emirates, UAE, and Bahrain. In June 2017, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain cut off diplomatic relations with Qatar, citing the country's alleged support of groups considered to be extremists. This resulted in increased Qatari economic and military ties with Turkey and Iran. Oh, gosh. Qatar expected to host the 2022 FIFA World Cup from the 21st of November to 18th of December, becoming the first Arab country to do so. This is just so hard to get your head around. Okay. Qatar is either a constitutional or an absolute monarchy ruled by the Thani family. So, it's either. It looks like an absolute monarchy. They haven't mentioned a constitution. The Al Thani dynasty has been ruling Qatar since the family house was established in 1825. In 2003, Qatar adopted a constitution that approved direct election of 30 of the 45 members of the Legislative Council. The constitution was overwhelmingly approved. The 8th Emir of Qatar, Tamim bin Hamad Thani, whose father was Hamad bin Khalifa, so bin means the father, handed power to him in 2013. The Emir was exclusive power to appoint and remove Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers, who together constitute the Council of Ministers. which is the supreme executive authority in the country. The Council of Ministers also initiates legislation. Laws and decrees proposed by the Council of Ministers are referred to the advisory councils for discussions, after which they are submitted to the Emir for ratification. A consultative assembly has a limited legislative authority to draft and approve laws, but the Emir has a final say on all matters. The current council, which, it's, you know, quite honestly, it's such a small population, is probably the best way to do it. The current council is composed entirely of members of, appointed by the Emir, as no legislative elections have been held since 1970, when the partial elections of the body. Legislative elections have been postponed until at least 2019. Well, the council also hosts the 140th Inter-Parliamentary Union Assembly for the first time in 2019. Qatari law does not permit the establishment of political bodies or trade unions. Oh, God. According to Qatari constitution, Sharia law is the main source of the Qatari legislation. Although, in practice, Qatari's legal system is a mixture of civil law and Sharia law. Well, Sharia law is applied to family law, inheritance, and several criminal acts, including adultery, robbery, and murder. In some cases, Sharia-based family courts treat the female testimony as being worth half a man. Codified family laws was introduced in 2006. Islamic polygamy is allowed. Judicial corporal punishment is common in Qatar due to the Wahhabi interpretation of Sharia law. Although Qatar, this is where you can give some lashes, it had originally been a Hanbali school of mainstream Sunniism. Flogging is employed as a punishment for alcohol consumption and illicit sexual relations. Article 88 of Qatar's criminal code declares that the penalty for adultery is 100 lashes. In 2006, a Filipino woman was sentenced to that punishment. In 2010, at least 18 people, mostly foreign nationals, were sentenced to receive between 40 and 100 lashes for offences of illicit sexual relations or alcohol consumption. In 2011, at least 21 people, mostly foreign nationals, were sentenced to between 30 and 100 lashes for the same reasons. And in, well, there you go, you're getting some really... In 2012, 6 expatriates were sentenced to either 40 or 100 lashes. Only Muslims considered medically fit are liable to have such sentences carried out. In April 2013, a Muslim expatriate was sentenced to 40 lashes for alcohol consumptions. In June 2014, a Muslim expatriate was sentenced to 40 lashes for consuming alcohol and driving under the influence. Well, there you go. Stoning is legal punishment in Qatar. The apostasy and homosexuals are crimes punishable by the death penalty. So what does apostasy? I have to find that. However, the death penalty hasn't been carried out for either. Blasphemy can reach 7 years prison, while proselytizing can incur a 10-year sentence. Alcohol consumption is partly legal in Qatar. Some five-star hotels are allowed to sell alcohol to their non-Muslim customers. Muslims are not allowed to consume alcohol, and those caught consuming are liable to flogging and deportation. Non-Muslim expatriates can obtain a permit to purchase alcohol for personal consumption. Qatar Distribution Company, the subsidiary of Qatar Airways, is permitted to import alcohol and pork. It operates the one and only liquor store in the country, which also sells pork to holders of liquor licenses. Qatari's officials have also indicated a willingness to allow alcohol in fan zones at the 2020 FIFA World Cup. Until 2011, restaurants on the Pearl Qatar, a man-made island near Doha, were allowed to serve alcoholic drinks. In December 2011, however, Pearl restaurants were told to stop selling alcohol. No explanation was given to the ban, and though speculation included encouraging a more pious image before significant elections, a significant election, and rumours of financial dispute between the government and resort developers, the alcohol ban was later lifted. In 2014, a modesty campaign was launched To remind tourists that the country's restrictive dress code, female tourists were advised not to wear leggings, mini-skirts, sleeveless dresses, or short or tight clothing in public. Men were warned against wearing only shorts or singlets. Well, there you go. That's Australians. Australians would have a bit of a problem. Foreign relations. As a small country with larger neighbours, Qatar seeks to project influence and protect its state from the ruling dynasty. The history of Qatar's alliances provides insight into the basis of their policies. Between 1760 and 71, Qatar sought foreign protection from the high transitory powers, the Ottomans, the British, the Al-Kafirs from Bahrain, the Arabians and Wahhabis from Saudi Arabia. Qatar's rising international profile and active role in international affairs had led some analysis to identify it as a middle power. Qatar was an early member of OPEC and founding member of the Gulf Cooperation Council. It is a member of the Arab League. A country has not accepted compulsory international court of justice jurisdiction. Qatar also has bilateral relationships with a variety of foreign powers. Qatar is a strategic ally of China, with the relationship between the two countries growing stronger. It also hosts the Al Udeid Air Base, a joint US-British base which acts as a hub for all American and British air base operations in the Persian Gulf. Why is the British having an air base in Bahrain? I don't understand. It has allowed the American and the British forces to use the air base to send supplies to Iraq and Afghanistan. According to leaked documents published in the New York Times, Qatar's record of counter-terrorism efforts was the worst in the region. The cable suggested that Qatar's security service was hesitant to act against known terrorists out of concern of appearing to be aligned with the US and provoking reprisals. Qatar has mixed relations with the neighbours in the Persian Gulf. Qatar signed a defence cooperation agreement with Iran, with whom it shares the largest single non-associated gas field in the world. It was the second nation, the first being France, to have publicly announced the recognition of the Libyan Opposition Transitional Council. The new government of Libya amidst the 2011 Libyan Civil War. In recent years, Qatar has been using Islamist militants in a number of countries, including Egypt, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Mali, to further its foreign policy. Courting Islamists from the Muslim Brotherhood to Salafist groups has served as a power amplifier of the country, as it believes since the beginning of the Arab Springs that these groups represented the wave of the future. David Cohen, under the Secretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence in the US, said Qatar is a permissive jurisdiction for terrorist financing. There is evidence that these groups supported by Qatar include a hardline Islamic military groups active in northern Syria. In 2015, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey are openly backing the Army of Conquest, an umbrella group of anti-government forces fighting the Syrian civil war, and reportedly includes Al-Qaeda and linked Al-Nusra Front and Safi Coalition as the Ash-Sham. So this is really strange. In Egypt, Qatar supported the first ever democratically elected president Mohamed Morsi via diplomatic support and state-owned Al Jazeera network until he was overthrown by a military coup in 2013 following mass protests against his rule. Qatar offered Egypt $7.5 billion loan during the year he was in power. Qatar's alignment with Hamas, first reported in early 2012, has drawn criticism from Israel, the United States, Egypt and Saudi Arabia, who accused Qatar of undermining regional stability by supporting Hamas. The foreign minister of Qatar, so they're linked with Iran, who's Shiite, and Bahrain is ruled by Sunnis. Okay. Qatar hosted academic, religious, political and economic conferences. The 11th annual Doha Forum recently brought key thinkers, professionals of various backgrounds and political figures from all over the world to discuss democracy, media, information technology, free trade, water security issues. In addition to the forum, it's featured the Middle Eastern Economic Future Conference since 2006. And gee, you know what? There's that word I really wanted to remember. It's totally gone from my head. That's horrible. In more recent times, Qatar has hosted peace talk between rival factions across the globe, notably among include the Darfur Agreement. The Doha Declaration is based on a peace process in Darfur and has achieved significant gains on the ground in the African region. Notable achievements include restoration of security and stability, progress made in construction and reconstruction processes, return of displaced residents, uniting the Darfur people to face the challenges and push towards police peace process. Qatar donated £88.5 million in funds to finance the recovery and reconstruction of Darfur. So I'll see if I can remember that word, Darfur. I've got to read about the military. It goes, I'll finish off reading about the military. In June 2017, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Egypt and Yemen broke diplomatic ties with Qatar, accusing Qatar of supporting terrorism, escalating dispute over Qatar's support of the Muslim Brotherhood, considered a terrorist organisation by those FICE Arab nations. Saudi Arabia explained the move to be more necessary measure and protecting the kingdom's security. Qatari troops were also removed from the military coalition in Yemen. Egypt closed its airspace and seaports to Qatari transportation. In June 2018, Saudi Arabia announced a bid to construct a waterway shell canal on their border with Qatar, which shall in effect turn it into an island country. 2 years after the diplomatic crisis, Jordan took the step towards restoring relations with Qatar. In July 2019, Amman appointed a new ambassador to Qatar, who has been withdrawn in 2017 in support of the Arab Gulf Arab allies. Oh, far out. Wow. The Qatar Armed Forces are military forces of Qatar. The country maintains a modest military force of approximately 11,800 men. So the Australian Armed Forces, I have to read an article on that, somewhere between 20 and 30,000, so including an army of 8,500, navy of 1,800, and air force of 1,500. Qatar's defence expenditures account for approximately 4.2% of gross national product in 1993 and 1.5% of the gross national products in 2010. The most recent year's year available in the Spry statistical database. Oh, gee, I'm being bitten by. Qatar has recently signed defence pacts with the United States, United Kingdom, as well as France in earlier 1994. Qatar plays an active role in collective defence of the Gulf Operation Council. The other members are Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, UAE, Oman. The presence of a large airbase operated by the United States and several other UN nations provides a guaranteed source of defence and national security. In 2008, Qatar spent $2.3 billion on military expenditures, 2.3% of the gross national product. Qatar's special forces have trained by France and other Western countries are believed to possess considerable skills. They have helped by the Libyan rebels securing the Battle of Tripoli. Wow. Well, that's interesting. It's interesting that you'd have special forces from such a small population base. I just wonder how our SAS, like I know a few SAS soldiers. Stockholm International Peace Research, SIPRI, found that in 2010-14, Qatar was the 46th largest arms importer in the world. writes, Qatar plans to transform significantly enlarged its armed forces have been accelerated. And orders in 2013 for 62 tanks, or more tanks than Australia has, 24 self-propelled guns from Germany were followed by 2014 by a number of other contracts, including 24 compact helicopters, 3 early warning control aircraft from the US, and 2 tanker aircraft from Spain. My God. Qatar's military participated in the Saudi Arabian-led intervention in Yemen against Shia Houthis. So I don't quite understand that, because they're Shia. In 2015, Al Jazeera America reported, quote, numerous reports suggest that the Saudi-led coalition against the opposition groups in Yemen has indiscriminately attacked civilians and used cluster bombs in civilian populated areas in violation of international law. Many citizens have been killed, but a large part of the infrastructure in this region is now destroyed. Hospitals have also been bombed by the Saudis and those operating with them. Qatar was suspended from the coalition in Yemen due to the 2017 diplomatic crisis. So what a complex thing. And you can see a jet there, and it's a Dassault Mirage flying over the Libya. In it looked like a Mirage, a Qatari. It's beyond how a Mirage could be flying in 2000. I do not know. It's so old. Okay, so human rights, I'll get into that next time. And we've got how many pages to go? Not too many. We'll probably do this in two rounds. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.